So Dario Amodei just published this essay called Machines of Loving Grace. And it's, look, I know the CEO of an AI company writing about how great AI will be sounds like the most predictable thing ever, but stay with me here.
He opens by basically acknowledging that exact problem, right? Like, I talk about risks all the time, people think I'm a doomer, but actually, I'm wildly optimistic about the upside.
Yeah, and there's this interesting tension where he's like, I don't want to sound like a propagandist, I don't want to be grandiose, but also, we need to talk about what we're fighting for, not just what we're fighting against.
The framing device he uses is actually pretty clever. He defines powerful AI very specifically. Smarter than Nobel Prize winners, can control physical tools through computers, millions of instances running in parallel.
He calls it a country of geniuses in a data center, which is both evocative and slightly terrifying. But then he does this thing where he tries to figure out what limits that intelligence. What are the bottlenecks?
Right, because the two extremes are nonsense. Either you get instant singularity, where everything transforms overnight, or you get intelligence doesn't matter because we're bottlenecked by other factors. The truth is somewhere messy in between.
So he lists these limiting factors: speed of the physical world, need for data, intrinsic complexity, constraints from humans, physical laws. The question becomes, how fast can intelligence route around those limits?
And his answer for biology is basically, we could compress 50 to 100 years of progress into 5 to 10 years. He calls it the compressed 21st century.
Okay, so let's dig into that, because the biology section is where he gets most specific. His core argument is that biological progress isn't driven by incremental improvements. It's driven by maybe one breakthrough per year.
CRISPR, mRNA vaccines, optogenetics, various microscopy techniques. He's saying these discoveries have extremely high returns to intelligence. They're made by small numbers of creative researchers, often the same people repeatedly.
And here's what got me. He points out that CRISPR was sitting there in bacterial immune systems since the 1980s. It took 25 years for someone to realize you could repurpose it for gene editing. That's not a hardware limitation. That's a we didn't think of it limitation.
Which suggests if you had 1,000 AI researchers who were smarter than the best human biologists, you could 10x the rate of these fundamental discoveries. But I want to push back on something. Even if you discover things faster, you still need clinical trials. You still need to actually test things in humans.
He addresses that, though. His argument is that when something works really well, approval goes much faster. mRNA vaccines got approved in 9 months during COVID. The reason most trials are slow is because most drugs barely work.
That's actually a good point. If you're trying to prove a cancer drug extends survival by 3 months, you need massive studies and years of data. If you're proving something that cuts mortality by 95%, the statistical power you need is way lower.
So his prediction list is pretty wild. Elimination of most infectious disease. Elimination of most cancer. Prevention of Alzheimer's. Effective treatment of genetic diseases. And this is the big one. Doubling of human lifespan to 150 years.
The lifespan thing is where I get skeptical. He argues it's on trend because lifespan doubled in the 20th century from 40 to 75. So doubling again to 150 is just continuing the pattern.
But those are completely different mechanisms. The 20th century gains were mostly about preventing premature death, childhood disease, infection, accidents. Actually slowing the aging process is a different beast.
He acknowledges that, but points out that some animals already live 200 years, and there are drugs that increase rat lifespan by 25-50%. So it's not physically impossible. The question is whether AI can figure out the right biomarkers and interventions fast enough.
The neuroscience section builds on the same framework. He thinks mental illness could be mostly cured or prevented through some combination of better drugs, targeted brain interventions like optogenetics, and behavioral tools.
What struck me there was his optimism about things we don't even classify as clinical disorders, like everyday problems. Some people get angry easily. Some people can't focus. He thinks those could all be addressed.
He calls it biological freedom.
This idea that weight, appearance, reproduction, mood, cognition, all of it becomes fully under your control, which sounds amazing, but also raises a ton of questions about inequality and access.
Which brings us to Section 3, Economic Development and Poverty. This is where his confidence level visibly drops. He's way less certain AI can solve inequality than that it can cure cancer.
Because technology is one thing, but getting it distributed globally when you have corruption, weak institutions, political barriers, that's a different problem. You can't just invent your way around human social structures.
His most optimistic case is 20% annual GDP growth in the developing world, 10% from AI-enabled economic decisions, and 10% from technologies naturally spreading. That would bring sub-Saharan Africa to current China GDP levels in 5-10 years.
But he's very explicit that this is a dream scenario, not a default outcome. He keeps saying, we have to fight for this, and this won't happen automatically.
The piece about disease eradication in poor countries is more concrete, though. Smallpox was eradicated in the 1970s through top-down campaigns. He thinks AI could optimize those campaigns way better than humans can.
And some biological advances make distribution easier by design. Like if you can release mosquitoes that block malaria transmission, that's one centralized action instead of treating millions of individual cases.
Then we get to the democracy section, which is where things get really contentious. His basic take is, AI doesn't structurally favor democracy the way it structurally favors health improvements. It could help authoritarians just as much.
So he proposes this entente strategy. Democracies form a coalition, get a decisive advantage in AI by controlling the supply chain, use that for military superiority, and to set terms for how AI gets deployed globally.
That's incredibly geopolitically fraught. He's basically saying democracies need to win the AI race decisively enough that they can offer other countries a deal. Join us and get the benefits, or get left behind and face a superior adversary.
He calls it eternal 1991. Like, what if we could freeze that moment when liberal democracy seemed ascendant and Fukuyama was writing about the end of history? Except this time, make it stick, because democracies have overwhelming AI-driven advantages.
I'm torn on this, because on one hand, yeah, I'd rather live in a world where democracies have the upper hand. On the other hand, this requires an extraordinary amount of coordination and some pretty aggressive moves to maintain that advantage.
There is also this interesting bit about using AI to improve democracy internally. Like, could AI make legal systems more impartial? Could it help citizens understand and access government services better?
The legal system idea is fascinating. He points out that law tries to be impartial, but relies on fuzzy human judgments about things like cruel and unusual punishment. AI might be the first technology that can make broad, fuzzy judgments in a repeatable, mechanical way.
Though he's not saying replace judges with AI. More like use AI as a tool that can be studied for bias in ways human judges can't be. You can't use interpretability techniques on a human brain.
Okay, final section, work and meaning. This is the one he's most uncertain about, and it shows. He basically admits he doesn't have clear answers.
On meaning, his take is pretty straightforward. Most people aren't the best in the world at anything, and that's fine. He spends time playing video games and hiking, and those generate zero economic value, but he still finds them meaningful.
Right. Meaning comes from human relationships and personal challenges, not from being economically productive. But the economic question is harder. What happens when AI can do literally everything better and cheaper than humans?
He thinks comparative advantage will keep humans economically relevant for a while, but eventually admits that won't hold. At that point, we need some new economic system that nobody has really envisioned yet.
He mentions UBI as maybe part of the solution, but not the whole thing. Could be some kind of AI-run economy that distributes resources based on what makes sense to reward in humans. He's clearly uncertain here.
What's interesting is he draws parallels to previous economic transitions. Hunting to farming, farming to feudalism, feudalism to industrialism. Those all seemed impossible to predict from inside the previous system.
So, stepping back, The thing that strikes me about this whole essay is the tension he identifies at the end. In one sense, this vision is radically optimistic and will sound absurd to most people. In another sense, it feels almost obvious, like multiple paths to a good future converge here.
He references that Ian Banks novel, where the protagonist shows that cooperative values are actually a winning strategy, even in a game designed around ruthless competition. The idea that there's a kind of moral logic that pulls societies toward fairness and cooperation.
But here's my question. How much of this is real analysis versus motivated reasoning? He's the CEO of an AI company. Of course he wants to believe AI will solve everything, and we just need to make sure the good guys win the race.
I think that's fair, but he does try to ground it in specifics. The biology section isn't just AI will cure cancer. It's here are the specific types of discoveries that drive progress. Here's why those have high returns to intelligence. Here's why clinical trials won't be the bottleneck people think.
And he's much less confident about the parts that are harder to analyze. Inequality, democracy, meaning. Those sections are full of caveats about how we have to fight for good outcomes, and nothing is guaranteed.
The timeline is aggressive, though. 5 to 10 years after powerful AI for all of this? That's 2029 to 2034 if his AI timeline is right. That's soon enough that a lot of us will find out if he's correct.